Welcome to the Compliance Perspectives Podcast. I'm Adam Turtletaub from the Society Corporate Compliance and Ethics and Healthcare Compliance Association. Joining us today from Sacramento is Amy Barnard-Bond. Amy is a compliance veteran and executive coach, and today we're going to talk about teams' effectiveness. First, Amy, thanks for taking the time to talk to us.
Absolutely. Thanks for inviting me, Adam.
Oh, my pleasure. Now, I saw an article that you'd written for Compliance and Ethics Professional magazine that really intrigued me. And in it, you laid out five factors for discovering your team's effectiveness. Now, let's start with the first one, which is trust, which, you know, is obviously a very fundamental thing. Now, how do you build it? And what are some of the less obvious things that can erode it?
Great question, Adam. Well, to have trust on your team, which I think we all agree is a foundational element for everything, team members need to believe two things. They need to, number one, believe that their team members have good intent, that their peers have good intent. And number two, they need to be in an environment where they can be honest and open with each other. And that sounds maybe, it's simple, but it's not easy. It requires vulnerability, and it requires a leader creating and probably most importantly, rewarding a collaborative environment. And it's not something that happens overnight. It's something that's built over time with multiple experiences of commitment combined with follow through and credibility. And to your second question around what can erode trust, I would say having a star player, you know, having the one person that gets all the attention or gets all the plum assignments. And some leaders, I'm sure you've been in situations like this, Adam, I know I have, but some leaders stoke competition between team members. And that can really create a lot of politics and a lot of conflict that's toxic. And then the last thing that I would say in another type of leadership style that I've seen is leaders that aren't direct in communication and that don't keep their promises and that don't share information freely. And those can really erode trust.
Yeah, they definitely can. And you know, the whole idea of playing favorites creates conflict, and mastering conflict is critical both for the team's success and, you know, also for compliance professionals working with the business unit. What's the secret sauce for turning conflicts into something constructive and not destructive?
Yes, that is a really important one. I think the number one takeaway I would tell people is to, number one, accept that conflict is a natural part of life and it's a part of being human. And if you reframe it that way and you truly accept that, and then you can understand that conflict is a part of necessarily of good decision making. And the other second most important point I think I would make is that every one of us needs to be self-aware enough around how we relate to conflict, how we're wired to respond to stress or challenge. And there are some really well-established tools and models around finding this out for yourself, around whether you move towards conflict or you move away or you just shut down. Those are kind of the three typical responses from a neuroscience standpoint. I do a lot of workshops with clients around this. And if you have an individual and team awareness around your leadership style and your preferences and those of your team, it can help you depersonalize conflict and help you get to a team norm that is more built on candor and surfacing issues. And we know that in compliance, particularly, all of us know that speaking up is really important. And we need to be expert at this for ourselves, I think, as a tool of leadership as well. And this makes people uncomfortable. Conflict is not fun for most people. It can cause a lot of stress, but the sooner we kind of acknowledge that it is what it is, one of my colleagues, who's a fabulous coach, David Peterson, he founded the coaching program at Google. He has this wonderful quote that I love that's, there's no learning in the comfort zone and there's no comfort in the learning zone. And you know, isn't that great? And yeah. And it's around, you know, look, if we want to learn, we're going to get uncomfortable. And that's just a fact. So those of us who want to be great leaders, who want to lead change, who want to do this, and I'm assuming everyone on this call does, because I see compliance officers as change leaders for culture in our organizations, it's going to be uncomfortable. And so doing that bit of self-learning in our team and then setting the example is really critical.
That it is, that it is. And one of the things I always find interesting about conflict is even, you know, you can see it between how families handle it or among cultures, sure. You know, it can be wildly different. Some value sort of a placidity or at least keeping things calm always. And you get to others where, you know, the volatility seems to be the norm. Now, let's talk about a third factor that you address, which is achieving commitment. And you observe that consensus can actually end up hurting commitment. How so?
There's this paradox. You know, I would say because consensus usually isn't real, Adam.
How so?
It's usually head nodding. Because if you don't have trust and a good mastery of conflict, team members usually don't speak up. They feel like it's pointless to really talk about it. If the boss comes in with an idea, for example, and just says, you know, let's do this. Most teams lack a healthy team norm of really debating and hashing out the tough issues. So trust and mastering conflict are really fundamental to this third element of achieving commitment. They build on each other. But commitment really means to me a group of individuals fully buying into a decision when they don't necessarily agree. And you do this by cultivating a speak up team culture where opinions are aired and all opinions are shared, and then you make a decision. Because most people, Adam, don't expect that they're going to get their way all the time, if you really get down to it, right? But they do want to be heard and they want to feel like they contributed. And so you achieve commitment by having that full debate. And most people reasonably know that all decisions won't go their way. But you can, one of my favorite quotes around this is Jeff Bezos, who, you know, like it or not, has a great quote from one of his shareholder letters that's disagree, then commit. And he talks famously about a couple of decisions that were brought to him that he completely disagreed with, some ideas, you know, some pitches around what to invest in. But he realized it was better just to let his team go with it and check back in, hold them accountable. And if it didn't work out, they would abandon the idea later. And he says, you know, I've been wrong a few times. But the important thing is to hash it out, make the decision, move on, commit to it, and then revisit it.
Yeah, well, it never helps to, you know, be obstructionist, and it always helps if you're willing to admit your errors either way and learn from them and move on. And, you know, there's a whole ethos now about failing quickly in organizations, try things and learn from it. And it makes me think about when I used to work in direct response advertising, where you were constantly testing new things. And there were, as they said, the only failure was the test where you couldn't really read the results. You know,
if
the new thing failed, it meant the old thing was still good. And if the new thing beat it, it wasn't that the old thing was bad. You found something better. And it ends up producing a very different approach to business. Now, let's talk about embracing accountability, which you talked on a little bit just this moment ago. The challenge I often see is that too often accountability isn't about accepting responsibility and trying to learn from things, but determining who's going to get punished and blamed. How do you avoid making that mistake? Because too often, you know, you hear about, for example, you know, zero tolerance policies and things like that, and it becomes about punishment rather than how do we learn from this?
Right. That is a really important point. Accountability shouldn't just come up at the end, you know, when the test is finished, for example, to use your example. Accountability in terms of team building to me means the degree to which team members are willing to call each other out on behavior that's damaging to the team relationship and to the goal achievement. So I would describe it as it needs to be a norm that is occurring all along the way, so that it's not just whipped out at the end of, oh, this was your fault, I never agreed to this kind of a thing, which I think you're referring to, and we've all probably unfortunately seen that. So it needs to be a group habit, so that it's not used as a gotcha. And so if the team is all working together, in concert together, they're giving each other micro feedback, what I would call feed forward, you know, around, hey, you know, when you were late to the meeting, when you're late and we're all there, we can't start on time and it just doesn't feel good. Or, you know, you need to get back to that client. We had an agreement, it would be a 48-hour commitment, that kind of a thing, right? The little things that add up. And then you can avoid major mistakes where there then is finger pointing at them, and then people are not wanting to get, you know, caught holding the bag. And I think it enables problems to be identified and resolved because it's safer to talk about them. Now, I'll acknowledge that this is where at times the leader may need to step in. They may, you know, you want to drive self-governing culture. You want to drive a norm where the leader isn't always the one who is having to make those calls. But at times, I would say with accountability, this is one where the leader needs to kind of help set the boundaries and set the tone.
Yeah, and setting the tone in these kinds of things really does make a difference about whether this is a finger pointing exercise or a learning one. Now, finally, advocate for focusing on results, which I think goes hand in hand a bit with accountability. It's an obvious goal, but it can be a hard one, especially since compliance is about ensuring you achieve the results in the right way. How do you keep the right amount of focus on the results?
Yeah, and that's very important in compliance, of course. The focus needs to be on the how and the what. It needs to be the actual goal, you know, what the goal is, and then how it's achieved, particularly in compliance. And I think that a true accounting of results factors in holistically what I think of as the life cycle cost of a decision. So it's our job in compliance to see around the corners of business decisions. We do it all the time. We project the risk. We say, okay, if we do X, then Y. If the compensation, the variable comp in sales is too much on this one area, what's it going to do in terms of our compliance, perhaps with FCPA or other compliance issues? So I think that focusing on results in terms of the integration of future costs has to be a part of that, and that's a part of our advocacy and our influencing and education role with the business.
I think all of this is really good food for thought for anyone in compliance as they look at building their own team and also how they work with others. Amy, I want to thank you for both the contribution to the magazine as well as this podcast. I want to thank all of you also for taking the time to listen. I'm Adam Turteltaub from SCCE and HCCA. I hope we're able to expand your compliance perspective.